Howdy, partners. Welcome back to another great rendition of the Howdy Partners podcast. I want to introduce the listeners to our special guest this week. We've got Alicia, or as we like to call him, Al, in our Vidyard little ecosystem from where we worked. Al, how are you doing?
I am doing great. Nice warm day in Canada. You know, always makes you want to be outside.
Happy to hear you're doing well. And just for everyone to kind of key in, today's topic is a fun one that I feel like Will, Al, and myself have at least like shared a little bit of because of our work experience together. But I'm going to talk about what it's like to navigate strategic partnerships. And I'll kind of kick it over to you, Alicia. You know, tell us where you're working now, your role, but more importantly, you know, where did your journey in strategic partnerships start? And kind of talk about like the lessons that you learned as you kind of first got into that mix.
Absolutely. So right now in my career, I'm actually director of partnerships at a CPG company called Vividly. So building partnerships from the ground up, trying to grow a team, trying to build strategic partnerships from the scratch. So definitely timely topic here, something I think about quite a bit these days. But you know, my first experience building a strategic partnership was with you two, actually, when we were over at Vidyard. I think the first time you take on a strategic partnership, it's not necessarily that you did it on purpose. I think it's sometimes something that, you know, you're not super well prepared for, but you kind of dive right into it because maybe you're the solo partner person, or maybe you've started to develop partnerships. And now, you know, you're just ready to take on a massive beast. At the time for me, that was a Salesforce partnership. So definitely, I think starting in might not always be purposeful, sometimes accidental, but always a great learning lesson.
Yeah, Will, do you have anything there? I feel like we beat the same drum there. It's like you kind of fall into partnerships. For me, it might have been a little bit more different. Like I was kind of searching it out after being on the agency side for 5 or 6 years. I was like, I can see this is an awesome environment to be in. So like, let me see if I can do it. But you, Alicia, I know you kind of like jumped right in boots first. Will, any thoughts there?
Yeah. And I was also brought in boots first, even though I was hired for a different role, technically. Alicia, you were like, I do need additional help. And I'm like, let's do it. And yeah, that was very interesting because it was a different dynamic compared to working with, you know, a volume of agencies versus one or two strategic partners. So what was it like in terms of working with the strategic partner from a just like your perception of the workload and all of that? But then also, what was effective? What did you actually do that you felt was kind of the staple for helping to bring that partnership forward and building progress there? What are your thoughts on that, Alicia?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the first thing you got to address is when you're building a strategic partnership, sometimes that can be for a massive company and sometimes it doesn't necessarily have to be for a massive company. In my situation, that was Salesforce. So, you know, you're dealing with a company with 80,000 employees. And like you, you know, when I'd worked with a ton of small technology companies, you know, it's a lot easier. You can cycle through the ones that are interested and the ones that aren't interested. When you have one or two strategic partners, whether you like it or not, whether they're interested or not, you have to make them interested. And so it's a bit of a challenge in that respect where like, you know, you can't always move on to a different partner or an easier partner to work with. And in some ways, you're almost thinking about easier people within the same organization to work with. So the value proposition isn't changing in the partnership. And really, one of the things that I think is always best when you take on a strategic partnership, maybe even every partnership, is just understanding the goals. I think that was like number one in really helping me learn how to work with an organization like Salesforce, which was, you know, the person that's managing my relationship. What makes them interested? What makes them want to help me? You know, I think that's step number one. The other thing is also what's going on in the organization. The teams that are most likely to be interacting with companies I want to be introduced to, if you're kind of running a referral type model, you know, what do they care about? How do they get paid? And really like understanding how that model works for a company that has a very established partner program is going to be in your benefit. And Salesforce is, you know, terms, for example, my partner person was compensated on how much revenue we sold into Salesforce, for example. But at the same time, their account executives were compensated on a size of deal. So if you had too small of a deal size, like less than 30K, you know, an AE that's helping you out might only make like 30 bucks. You know, nobody's getting on a call when your OTE is 300K for 30 bucks. So understanding what their incentives are to help push that, you know, work internally to maximize what their incentive is it's really going to set you up for success from the beginning, because at the end of the day, everybody's there to hit their own KPIs, and a partner is supposed to help you accelerate your KPIs on both ends.
Yeah. And so how can people navigate that? Is it, you know, at least from the Salesforce perspective, is it listed somewhere? Was it, you know, you asking the hard questions? Was it, you know, going to the partner person? Was it going to the AEs? How did you navigate figuring out what the people actually care about and what they're held accountable for?
Well, if you're listening to this podcast and you're interested, I think you're already on road number one, which is talk to people that have done it before. I think there's a lot to be learned from people that have gone through the struggle. There's no need to go through the struggle from the very beginning on your own. So I think like talking to other folks that have managed that type of partnership, learning from their experience, what's worked, what hasn't worked, really lets you have an upper hand in starting fresh. The other thing as well is talking to your direct, you know, point of contact. Most times you're going to have somebody who establishes a relationship with you. It's part of their official partner program. Salesforce does called a partner development manager or partner account manager. That person knows exactly which partners are succeeding and which ones aren't succeeding and why. And so getting a good glimpse and understanding from them and having them help you shape your program, super helpful. And then lastly, I'll say for sure, just trying to understand your internal network at your own company. So folks that might be connected or might have known somebody that worked at that company before, to help get you introduced to different parts of an organization you wouldn't have exposure to, so that you can learn from them, is also a great avenue.
Yeah, and you're touching on an avenue of success that we've harped on a few times recently, which is really understanding, you know, whether you're talking to your point of contact there or just like even someone in your internal team, is understand what makes them tick. So understand what they're judged on or the criterion for their you know, their comp is. Like, if it's lead volume, great. If it's like revenue numbers, great. But like, I think that's step number one to understanding how you can help them is by understanding, you know, their success metrics. And then the other point that I think is worth calling out too, and this is pretty global and broad when it comes down to establishing partner relationships, is ask the like brutally honest or transparent questions up front. Like, hey, you know what? Are you the right point of contact for me? Like, let's understand and talk about how this partnership is going to work or succeed. And let's talk about the initiatives or the two or three strategic paths that we have. And if this isn't you, then who is it? And so like, it's not necessarily meant to cut this person out, but I think what it helps do is establishes the relationships that you need to have to be able to drive that success. And it hopefully helps kind of like shed a lot of light visibility for the other end too, like saying, okay, you know, if I'm working with Al and I know that I need to pull on, you know, my AEs or the CX team, then I need to help establish relationships there just to drive that forward. So all good points. And I think, I mean, just tapping into the network of, there's so many partner people now that have gone through this. And as we've talked about, the partnership professional world, we are very open to sharing and very open to helping. So, you know, if you're worried about, you know, intellectual property or what other people like might have done successfully in the past, please don't ask anyone, ask Alicia, like ask us, because we more than likely to not have experienced it and can help you get there. So let's kind of flip the script here. We talked about some stuff like how you can establish that kind of like get in the door motion, but let's talk about maybe what's gone wrong or maybe some more common missteps that you faced. So just so we can shed light to, you know, people that are in strategic partnership or getting into it, like what to look out for, what are those roadblocks, what do you feel like you missed?
I'd put them at three things. The first one is bandwidth. Do you have it? The second one is, are you working with the right person? And I'd say the last one is, are you evaluating it enough to recognize that this is good or bad in the long run? So, you know, to break it down, you know, the first one is bandwidth. Sometimes strategic partnerships can be huge, right? They take a ton of time, ton of effort. And if you're a first partnership person, I think one of the mistakes that I've made and maybe even am making right now is you sometimes try to take on something that's too big. It doesn't have to be so complicated. Sometimes it can be easy. Sometimes just a referral partnership where you're friendly is good enough. It doesn't always have to be to the point of level of strategicness where, you know, the product teams are integrating, you're doing a ton of co-marketing together. Sometimes that's overkill. So when you're thinking about strategic partnerships, definitely think about the fact that, you know, you also have other partners that you could potentially be working with. And investing everything into one partner might not always be the best route, even if you have a lot of conviction. I always say, like, you can have a lot of conviction that it's the right move, but don't be so determined that you don't see the red flags. So you can take a step back and recognize, okay, as much as I would love to execute on this, I just don't have the time. The second one that I see often happen, especially in companies that have very large partner programs, whether it's Salesforce, NetSuite, Shopify, is the person that you're working with, their goal is to help you grow revenue alongside them. But it's not necessarily that they're going to be really good at their job. Let's round down and say 30% of people are probably not the best at what they do, or maybe don't even care. And so ultimately, if your whole program is reliant on one person and you're putting all the onus of success on them to unlock doors for you within their organization, probably not going to be successful. That's an unrealistic view of how much time and energy they have, especially with how stressed they might be and how many partners they might hold. So figuring out if you're working with the right person, if they have the bandwidth to help you, and understanding how to work that relationship so that you only ask them for help in areas where it's going to make them feel like it's a win, or go around them in areas where you feel like they just won't have the bandwidth to help you. Those are always great things to think about. And oftentimes I see people reach out to me. They're like, hey, I'm trying to build a Salesforce program. I saw you built one before. Like my partner person isn't introducing me to all the AEs. They're not bringing me into co-marketing activities. So I'm like, well, did you ever think about just reaching out to the AEs yourself? Right. They're like, I can do that. It's like, yeah, of course you can do that. You're a partner. All right. So it's like people oftentimes get so blocked up on their one point of contact who might be a blocker that they forget that, you know, you got to be scrappy sometimes. Go around them. And then the last one is sometimes partnerships just, even though they might be really exciting, you get all the internal buy-in, you got a ton of momentum at the beginning, kind of stalls out. Sometimes they can stall out and that momentum isn't accelerating. You're not getting that year-to-year growth. You need to reevaluate and think about whether, even if it's something you put a ton of energy and time into, you know, it's
the honeymoon phase.
Yes, exactly. It's the honeymoon phase. People are excited to continue that momentum. That takes a ton of work, ton of time. So also thinking about that, I think is important, making sure you don't have all your eggs in one basket again.
Yeah. And I want to pull on a thread there that I think, when we were working together, you did this really well. So you established that there is potential in the partnership. And let's say someone else is at that point as well as a listener, and they maybe feel a bit hung up on this one specific person in the organization, and you know they don't know how to navigate elsewhere. You mentioned reaching out to the AEs yourself. So what is like a day-to-day goal that someone could have to make sure that they're doing that and making progress towards, you know, if there's thousands of sellers at Salesforce, how do I even start? Like, what is that day-to-day practice that you did that allowed you to then build this influence and, you know, connect with those AEs and not have to rely on that partner manager? What are those day-to-day goals, and what does the actual like work look like for that day-to-day?
I think you make a really great point there. Sometimes people get hung up on what's that end of year goal, and they never really think about what's that day-to-day input that's going to make me successful. In a case like Salesforce, I think because I'd come from a BDR background, it was really easy for me to think about pipeline and partnerships in a very similar respect, right? Where if I'm not putting in 10 people into a sequence or a cadence every single day, I know by the end of the month, I'm not going to make it. And like, there's no point reaching out to just one account, you know, as a salesperson, reaching out to one account and just hope that that's the one that's going to land and close. That's not realistic in sales, nor is it realistic in partnerships. So especially that's one of the advantages of having a big company like Salesforce is there are so many people. So you do have a ton of opportunity to, you know, engage with many people, trial, error, so that you can actually build a really strong process of engagement. For me, what I would do is I would kind of like work back. So I'd figure out what's the math? How many AEs does it take to refer one deal to me? How many AEs do I need to engage? So let's work that back. And if my quarter number is, you know, $500,000, how many AEs do I need to talk to make that possible at all? So really like working back your pipeline and your funnel, kind of like you would as an AE, I think is always a super valuable skill and a thing to do. I actually still do that now. It's not to the same level because I don't manage companies like Salesforce. But for me, it's like how many partners or, you know, how many people at a certain partner do I need to get X amount of pipeline? How many types of that partner do I need if I'm building like an agency model, for example? How many agencies would I need? So kind of like thinking about your metrics in terms of referrals and number of partners and pipeline. I think taking a look at that funnel and keeping track of that is super important.
Yeah. I think what many may get wrong is they think of it through, I need this many leads, and it stops like there. Like they, and then they know their funnel math thereafter within the organization, but they're like, I just need this many leads from the partner. So I'm going to go try and do that. But they don't look at, well, what's above that, those leads? Well, it's, you know, an AE actually being incentivized to talk about it. And so I think that's really smart to bring it, I guess, like one step above and think like a BDR when you're in these organizations, because you need to develop so many relationships. So I think like when I think about the work that you've done and also like the work that you continue to do, because I know that you did this in your previous role as well with other organizations, it's like, send those videos to people, like send those emails to all the CSMs, the AEs. If you're going to see them at an event, then like try and network with them. I think, we as partner people may get too focused on working with that partner manager and orchestrating from a high level and then just hoping that the leads come through. But it really comes down to everyone else in that network, in that ecosystem, even if it's one company that's massive. So I think that's a testament to your good work.
Yeah, I would add, there's a couple points. One you touched on earlier, which is like, if you've never experienced bandwidth issues before, then it's hard to visualize, like, you know, you're a super scrappy partner manager just getting into partnerships. The problem is, like, when you start to talk about everything from an activity standpoint that you need to pull off, you just can't physically do it. And granted, like that's based on a lot of things, but if you're looking at it from like a partnership capacity standpoint and you're hoping to get more than skin deep with your partners, you need to be, like, it's almost like the idea that you talked about earlier, where it's like, be super honest and transparent with yourself to then say, you know what, like, are the activities that I'm trying to initiate with my partners going towards my goals, going towards my numbers? And if no, then why are you doing it? You know, it's like, how many webinars do you try and do in a quarter with like five or six different agencies, and like the amount of work that it takes, whether you have a marketing team there or not? Like, dude, it is very easy to misstep. And so I think just like thinking about that in a forward lens, like, don't be afraid, regardless if it's your first role or your, you know, fifth role in partnerships, like, go in with a mindset that you are going to most likely have to forego a lot of activities or a lot of, I don't want to say relationships overall, but just like partnerships potentially, and downgrade them so that you're focusing on the ones that are driving the most value. And then the other thing you touched on too, which I think is really important, is that especially when working with someone like a Salesforce, which is like, you know, kind of like the golden goose in some regards, like, that is a large organization. And so you, on one side, like when someone gets scared that they've got a goal to hit and they're not going to hit it with like small agency partners, it's like, I don't have enough partners, or like this partner's generated nothing. Like, what am I going to do? Versus going into a strategic partnerships where it's like, I've got 30,000 people that I could talk to. Where do I start? You know, like I liked how you framed it in the sense that like, this is a positive opportunity where I have this many people to reach out to, but then it kind of leads into the point where it's like, you've got to build a name for yourself to like be in the forefront of their minds. Like, I remember some of the activities you were doing where it's just like lunch and learns and getting like as many of these Salesforce AEs just in front of your face, whether it's through a video or not. That's really important to kind of build that relationship. So it goes and speaks to like, you know, your experience as a BDR and just kind of like the sales mentality. But that to me is like those daily levers. Like, what are those levers that you're going to pull that will activate your yearly or quarterly goal? And like, people need to slow down and focus on what's in front of them, not, you know, like what's in front of them in a quarter away, because you're never going to hit your goals like that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We talked about the goal setting. And let's maybe break that down into like, we talked about these daily goals, like especially as you're trying to venture into strategic partnerships. But what do you think those lag measures or those bigger goals that, you know, really help make a partner organization run fluidly are, and why? I mean, aside from revenue, you know, like what are some more of those daily levers that you can pull?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. In the realm of strategic partnerships or in general?
Both.
I think from a general perspective, it's probably an easier lens to look at, but I think definitely comes down to aligning your goals with the goals of other folks in the organization. I think one of the things about partnerships and scaling partnerships is like getting cross-functional teams bought in. And the only way to do that is to help them hit their goals while you hit yours and having the same goals that you can hit together. So I think whether that's, you know, number of co-marketing events or webinars a quarter, or whether that's, you know, number of AEs you engage, I think there's a ton of different types of metrics you can think about and track. I think it's important to have something that's quantifiable so that you can reassess it. And one of the other things is also like definitions. I think that's one thing that I've recently, right, which is like, what's a ramped partner? What's an onboarded partner, right? What does that mean to you? And defining that, because that's a very qualitative metric against something that's very quantitative. So let's say you're with three ramped partners, you know, one is being tracked, but the other one, what does that mean? Right. So like defining it so it's easy for the rest of the organization to understand what those definitions mean, I think is super critical as well.
Yeah, I think the point of what does your business care about and the other teams, what do they care about, I think is very critical. Because let's say, you know, right now we're in the economic downturn. So then what are people looking at? Is it retention more? Is it a pipeline problem where they need more leads from the top of funnel? Is it closing revenue? That's where every partner person should be focusing their efforts, even if they were hired on to only focus on revenue. Because if you can show that you are then aligning with these business objectives that the business has as a strategic initiative, especially to survive, then helping that out can then say, I am extremely valuable, not just in my core metric, but also these other metrics that our business cares about. And I completely agree with those qualitative measures as well, because those things are going to have those long-term downstream effects of, oh, none of our partners are actually onboarded because we never defined what that means and built a process around that. So we have these partners, but they're not taking action.
Burning in my mind right now, just thinking about like aligning my organization's goals around like decrease or the LTV of a customer and like just the churn rates and like, okay, like how can I think about that in the partnership lens? And it's really easy for me to help enable my partners to help enable their customers. So hopefully you grease that. But man, yeah, I just go back to the first thing that Al said, which is like, dude, your bandwidth is so important. And I will tell you, like, if you do not take that as a critical thought up front, you are going to be in just like a buttload of hurt down the road, like trying to rebuild or trying to break down, trying to add tiering and like just the model of like what you're going after from like a managed perspective. Like it all comes down to managed time, right? That's why you have partnership teams there. And that's like what you do. So just food for thought. This has been great, Alicia. I appreciate you being on. Just in terms of wrapping up here, talked about a lot, but what's that one tactical takeaway? So if our listeners were like, you know what, I'm just getting in strategic partnerships, or I'm right in there, what's that one takeaway that you want to leave our audience?
Understand the goals of the people that you work with.
Stay tuned for another episode of Howdy Partners, and we'll join you next time.